Welcome to Book Club for Movies for the week of July 1st. I'm Ryan Miller, and weird color grading, it's Matt Amber. That's my quote from the movie.
I hope you keep the pause that you took for thinking about that in.
No, I did. You know what doesn't matter, though, is because a lot of podcast players, the one I use in particular, have the thing that skips pauses. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God, that would make that would just make things awful for me.
Saves a lot of time.
Yeah, it just sounds like everybody's talking really close together. Okay, I already about that. Like, that's just hard. Why would you?
It's not quite that bad, but saves a lot of time, as you can tell. If you're listening to this on one of those podcast players, imagine the amount of time that you've saved now.
Yeah, what you don't know is this show is actually like 4 hours long.
And this show is Book Club for Movies, where we watch one movie a week and we talk about it. Darn it. This week it's Primer, but before we get to Primer, we've been lax, Matt. Nay, negligent.
It is July 1st.
It's July 1st. That's not why we've been negligent, but I'm curious why. What does that have to do?
I mean, it's July 4th.
It's the week of July 1st. We're sticking with it now.
It's okay. I forgot. I've already forgotten that. Rewind it all. Take it away. Rewind it. Rewind it. Let me go back in the box.
Okay. B to A here. We've been lax. We've had comments on our movies, comments on our shows, comments, and we have not addressed them. We may have been busy. We may have just been grasping at straws, trying to find any time to record anything anyways. But I feel like, given the nature of the show, we might want to share some of these.
Yeah, let's hit me up. What do we got?
We have the incomparable Janky Old Broke Hobo Spider-Man. I love his Twitter talk. Jonathan Blade. Well, referring to our show on Banner Snatch, actually.
Bindle Snitch!
And actually looks like you replied to him. I don't know. The Twitter account replied to him.
I don't know
if that was you or me or if it just does it on its own now.
I always forget to tag myself.
I'll start tagging you from now on.
Thanks, man.
So he says, there is an ultimate ending. I went through almost all, if not all, of the endings in one session. And the deeper I got, the less satisfying I found the entire endeavor. Which is very interesting to me because we did talk a little bit about this. You, in fact, I think, looked up what the numerous endings were to some extent. But before that, we talked about how we both got to certain points in our journey and decided this was the end of the movie for us.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are differing points for us, and there was more that we could have done. It starts to cycle you back into the old stuff so that you do see everything if you want. But the fact that we didn't decide to go down that route, honestly, I'm not surprised at all to hear that it would make the whole thing a little less satisfying in the end, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. And I think I considered this even further on, but that's like, that is a movie that if it were done a little bit better, and I don't know how to, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that, in terms of a quality thing here, like, that is not a movie that you rewatch, even though that's the point of it. You know, it's to me that could have been done. There are better things out there that could have done this. I mean, for example, you want the best example that they could have done this with is Clue. Like, come on.
Didn't they actually do it with Clue? No, that was a very different thing.
No. I'm saying they could do it with Clue and it would be easy. Like, because that's a good movie.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So wait, you're saying they could do it with the old Clue?
Yeah.
Like the Clue that already came out.
As an example of a movie to do that with that would be rewatchable. I mean, like Bindle Snitch isn't rewatchable, even though that's the purpose of it. Whereas Clue is just rewatchable because it's,
I see what you're saying.
Because
Clue is just a funnier,
endings.
Like a better made movie. Yeah. Okay,
it's already
right,
built in with the multiple endings. So you can kind of do that. And there are different things throughout the movie that you could totally click over and go, okay, what?
Yeah, right. Yeah. No. Yeah. Bandersnatch, you're interested in almost the gimmick of it, like what it is.
Yes.
But you don't necessarily want to go back and get that story again.
Right.
Really.
No. And I think I honestly love that gimmick. Give me more episodes or things that do that. I'm super into it. It just needs to be done well and not like, I don't want Black Mirror to do 100 of these, you know, like I want to see other people do them with other types of content. But
what about Kimmy Schmidt?
See, Kimmy, the fact that Kimmy Schmidt's doing it, I think is brilliant. That's a great application. What a weird thing to put that in. I love it.
Well, I think the comedic applications of it, I am very much looking forward to whatever that ends up being.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, because it's just one of those things where I kind of go back and I imagine, oh, there's so many like weird, stupid gimmicks that you could do. And like Pratt falls with that. Like, oh, what does he fall on? He slips on a banana. Oh, he trips over, you know, a branch. No, he steps on a, you know, he pees on a electrified fence.
Don't worry. We won't be doing, we'd have nothing to do with it. So those are just off the top of our head, bad examples.
Those are the best examples.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan Blade, for that comment. Yep. Also, we have one from Dr. Mystery at I Love Horror 420 about our Stay Tuned show.
That was a good show.
It was a good show. Wait, the show we did was good or the movie was good?
Yes.
Okay. He says he wasn't expecting the humor to get that dark. He's a bit shocked people don't like it. Sorry, I just read this as it's written. I'm a bit shocked people don't like it, but dark humor isn't for everybody. He then shares that one of his favorite clips was the cartoon segment we talked about, which you liked more than me.
I did.
Although I had some positive things to say about
it. I'm a fan.
And then he followed up that he thought, sorry, quote, I think the only issue I had was the fact that the daughter was a tad annoying. This is one I'll definitely rewatch. I wouldn't be surprised if I missed some side gags because there was a ton. For a brief second, you see Frankenstein's monster doing stand-up, which I did not think a cat caught, actually.
Which also, by the way, is just such a great image.
It is. Do you remember seeing it?
Yeah.
I didn't catch it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I know exactly the moment.
I would also not be surprised if I missed some gags. Also, not sure I'm with him on the daughter thing. I mean, she was annoying, I think, by design, obviously. I think she nailed the character, I guess. But I think I also mentioned how that was maybe one of the things that worked better for me was her and the son's relationship or arc. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Anything to add for Dr. Mystery there?
No, thanks for I'm glad that you dug the movie, man. I think it's cool that people may not have seen this and are checking it out because it's a silly movie and it's a product of its time. And as it gets older, the jokes will become less and less relevant. People will get them less and less. But for me, you know, I get the references, so it's fun.
Does that make them better or worse? You decide.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Decide yes. Lastly, Mr. Adam Parkin, friend of the show. Been on the show, actually. No, wait, has he been on? He hasn't been on this show. He's been on the other show, the Tuesday show, which now is just the week of July 4th. He says, totally agreed that bonding is awesome. This is coming from our TVVB2 episode, which was, I guess, the last one we did.
That's right.
This thing.
That's correct. Good job.
I thought I heard that season 2 has been confirmed as well. Love, Death, and Robots is also worth watching. It's much more hit and miss, but it is worth watching, he says.
Yeah, and I agree with him.
All right. There you go. Those are the best ones. We just people that agree with us and add nothing and just make us look more and more righter.
Well, we're an alt-right.
Oh, boy. We did the Nazi stuff last show.
That's your fault. Points. I did mention you should check.
It's super interesting, too. I loved it.
I did mention, again, just the phrasing. Are we not doing phrasing anymore? Yeah, you did.
That's like,
if any of you have out there have seen the movie The Wave, it's not like a... Oh, it's The Wave. It's not like a surfer movie.
It's a sports movie.
Yeah, it's not that. If you've ever seen The Wave, the story about fascism and schools and stuff, I'm interested to hear what you thought of it because it's an interesting story.
Hey, since this is Book Club for Movies, that can go out on a tangent about media. It reminds me of the Arrested Development where Michael meets Heather Graham's character for the first time. And it's George Michael's teacher. And George Michael is telling his dad about how she loves Saddam Hussein. And Michael's like, oh, I think because he had made her like a poster with a bunch of Saddams and like hearts and stuff like that. She's like, oh, she really loves him. And he's like, oh, I'm sure she just thinks he's really interesting, actually. And then he shows up with it and she's like, oh, I love Saddam Hussein. It's a real great part. Go check it out. TV Club for Movies.
Heather Graham, underrated comedy actress.
Oh, yeah, sure. She's good.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You got real Midwestern there. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yattery.
Fargo's pretty good.
It's all right.
Do we want to talk about Primer? Or are we just avoiding it?
Let's talk about Primer. I'll talk about Primer. Here's Primer. Primer is going to come at you at an hour and 17 minutes. Written and directed by Shane Carruth. Starring Shane Carruth, David Sullivan, and Kerry Crawford. Here, my dear friends. My dear friends, here, my dear friends,
what is happening?
It's a synopsis for Primer.
Was that a time joke?
Could have been.
Okay, I'm not sure.
Get ready for another one.
At this point.
Two fledgling entrepreneurial engineers attempt to develop hardware that could reduce an object's weight by suspending gravity, but instead stumble upon something that will test the limits of their friendship over and over and over and over.
It's good. It's good.
Over.
I'm going to stop you there. I played bass for fledgling entrepreneurial at some.
Did you? I thought I'd heard about you somewhere.
Good joke from they do. That's a so I don't steal material here. That's a Riff Tracks bit, you know, the old Mystery Science Theater crew. Mm. They use that on a lot of stuff.
Do they? I was the bass player.
I played bass for whatever words you just said.
Sure. I'm glad they're doing that.
Primer. So let's start out with a little bit of history. If you can picture a young pretentious Ryan instead of an old pretentious Ryan at this point, sitting around in film school, just by dumb luck in film school and also in film school in Salt Lake City. So whatever that is, 40 minutes maybe at best from Park City, the Sundance center of the world. And so what happens during Sundance is often the movies will trickle down to downtown Salt Lake, or sometimes it's, I don't know if that's, no, I'm sure it played at Sundance also. But yeah, so movies would trickle down to downtown Salt Lake. I forget the name of the theater, but we would go every now and then. And what also trickled down would be the directors. And, you know, they would do the whole Sundance showing thing.
Right.
Except we got it a little bit closer to home.
But for human beings. Not.
But for human beings.
Yeah. Not Hollywood trash. Got it.
So I was there the year that Primer hit it big. And don't remember much beyond that. In fact, rewatching it this time, it was an interesting exercise in, did I not understand this at the time, or do I not remember it at all right now?
Sure.
So we'll come back to that.
All right.
But I remember the waves it made, and I remember loving it. I remember, you know, having a great shout out to Joe, a great conversation with Joe about the movie
good old
and
Joey
what
Joe.
We liked about it. Yep. But couldn't tell you much beyond that, actually. So this has been on my list. You kind of pulled it out of the ether of my list and next week's as well.
Yeah.
Upstream Color.
Again, by pure accident, having no idea that they were made by the same person. It was literally just two accidental things. I was like, oh, that one and that one.
It's good because now after watching this, I'm really curious what a follow-up from this guy, from Shane Carruth, looks like. So Primer, you've explained what it is exactly and not what it is at all. Basically, I think is what it comes down to. And while we can go through this chronologically, as we often do, I don't think it's going to matter. We're also going to spoil this. I'm going to lead the show finally with that.
Oh, thank goodness.
But of all of the movies that I've said, I don't think this can be spoiled. I don't think this can be spoiled.
Yeah.
Like,
it can't be.
They breadcrumb it pretty... I mean, okay, the breadcrumbing itself, I feel like, is going to be a large part of what we talk about during the show, but it is made in a way that the journey is everything. Like,
100%.
And I feel like you probably already know. In fact, just from that synopsis, you know everything. You're not going to learn anything newish, really, from the movie itself, but the way it is laid out is everything to this, I want to say.
No, 100%. So, I think it's okay. I think this is a movie that is, it's a combination of that in particular and the dialogue. And not only the but just the way the dialogue was shot, in that it's got that more like mumblecore thing, like that realistic people interrupt each other, they overtalk each other, all that stuff. For me.
Okay.
For me, I think
No, I think you're right, and I feel like this is going to pop up many times also. How much of it is a function of choice and how much of it is a function of budget?
Oh, sure.
You know, famously made for $7,000, and it actually, I looked at it, I think it made like $800,000.
Yeah, it was some crazy high number, like much bigger than...
Fair return on investment there. But that was one of the things I was actually most interested in coming at this from a rewatch, I guess, is that I remembered, and I couldn't find the actual quotes on this. I do have the Wikipedia up here just in case. I think we'll need it. But I couldn't find this exact quote, that a lot of the look of it had to do obviously with budget, but also with inexperience.
Sure.
But one of the things I remembered hearing was that part of the color choices in the movie had to do with the fact that they just didn't white balance, whether they forgot or didn't know how. And the color does shift wildly throughout this entire thing, you know.
I love it.
It's no, I love it too. I ended up loving all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I number one, I was curious if they went, you know, that's an easy fix. Like that can be fixed. I was curious if they would do that. They didn't. Thank you. But the movie is also noisy as hell.
Yes, it is. It's so, so, I love that too.
It's grain. It is everywhere.
It is one of those things that I absolutely like. I love when a movie looks like, when it looks like a movie.
Yes, visually noisy, I should say. Yes. Not talking about.
Like, I love it when a movie, like when it's captured correctly, you know, it's at the 24 FPS. And so it looks like a movie should, but has that awful grain. I actually love that.
No, yeah. I mean, okay. It can be done very well. You know what movie I did think about often when watching this was, what was the Netflix original we did that you liked? You brought it up. The Missing, The Only, The Boundless, The Endless.
The Endless.
Because that's one that's very much made with, like, maybe Primer would have looked a little bit more like that had it been made closer to today or when The Endless was made as opposed to back then. Like, they shot this on, I don't know if it was 16 millimeter, but on film.
Sure.
Which I didn't expect, especially for a budget of $7,000, but I ended up liking this so much more than The Endless. I think it's a stronger movie story and everything.
Okay,
but sure. Also the look. And I'm not quite sure, maybe that's what we'll dig into here, but I think what we both agree on so far, judging by your reaction, is that not only do we love it in spite of all this, we love it because of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's part of, like, it's... There are some movies where the movie just has charm, you know, and it's this is one of those things where the movie has charm because of this. It's like a part of it. So
it's just something about its lack of construction is compelling.
Very, very.
In a way. And you know what? Actually, this is what I came to thinking about that. It might be because, you know, somewhere in between him taking the catalytic converter off his car and removing all the tubes from his refrigerator, I start thinking about how they're making this time machine the same way they made this movie, just about. You know? I don't know if that helps.
No. It's funny because it's very, very apt. The thrust of the movie is, the synopsis gave it to you, but the thrust of the movie is these two guys are in a little tiny, they're in a four-man garage-based company that have been trying to make a variety of different things and make money off of them, and it's just not making it. The most recent thing being like an error checker that they're sending to like homes and not big businesses. But then two of them, the two better friends, have
Abe and Aaron,
yes. They kind of get together and start working on something that Abe has been wanting to work on. And the way that, I guess that's how the group kind of works, is they get a quorum and decide, the four of them, we're going to work on this project this time and do what we can. And then when we're done with that one, we'll move on to whoever is next. And this was his next project, was building it's supposed to be a machine that reduces, it's like, it's essentially an anti-gravity machine. That's what he was trying to build. And it turns into, a time machine.
I'm curious, did you garner all that from the actual film, or is this, did you look up something after the fact to understand that?
I understood the anti-gravity thing when he threw the stuff on top of it. He was trying to make stuff float. And he talks, man. and they were looking at they were weighing things. And when he weighed the, whatever the first thing they weigh, I can't remember what night, it wasn't their watches, which is the last thing I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Whatever the first thing is. Oh, it's the camcorder. They weigh the camcorder, and then they put the camcorder in there, and then they put the he has like a little thing that weighs 6 or 7 grams, and they turn it on and they talk about how it's weighing less and less and less, and that's what they're trying to get. I don't know why. Huh. I don't know what the point of it was. Okay. But
okay, so I didn't really understand that real well, and I part of me wonders if it's because of where I was coming from. You know, I was kind of expecting things that were coloring how I was receiving some of the stuff in the movie.
Sure.
But I think it's also because of the fact that they never say you know, they never look into the camera or look at each other even and say, we're working on an anti-gravity thing.
Right. No, it's just another one of their projects.
Well, and it's all communicated through this tech speak.
Yeah.
And it's not dumbed down. Like, there's a couple quotes out there about how Shane Carruth is talking about, like, I didn't want to dumb down the thing, whatever. It's just fine. I mean, you can talk about the real science or you can Star Trek it up. I don't care, you know? Regardless of my own stupidity.
Wouldn't go that far.
One of the strengths of this movie is the way that they do that. Is the way that they... Again, it's the breadcrumbing that I already mentioned. It's the breadcrumbing of the mystery. It's the breadcrumbing of... like how the story is told. It's told so indirectly that it's a wonder I'm able to stick with it as long as I can, or it's a wonder that I'm compelled as much as I am, I feel like, when watching the thing.
It is crazy, and like, yeah, crazy interesting. You just kind of want to see how it keeps going. But yeah, because it's not a straightforward narrative like the way those beats fall and like the things you expect are just not there.
No, in fact, I would be curious to see somebody's act breakdown of this movie. It's a short movie. It's like, what did you say? An hour 17.
Hour 17. And yeah, not much.
And it's perfect. Like, it shouldn't be any longer, but I'd be curious. Yeah. What people see as the act breaks in this thing, because it is, I mean, when you say the story, I can't remember the word you used, but when you say the story is told in this kind of non-traditional way, maybe that's what you said. I don't know.
Could have been.
It doesn't have
traditional story beats as
yes, that's what you were talking about. Yeah. See what happens when we talk about things minutes ago?
We'll figure it out.
It's because it is laid out in such a masterful way, but also it is intermixed with, like, they're showing clips from different timelines at different points in the movie.
Yeah.
It's not told completely linearly, or it is depending on, you know, the time as a construct.
That's true. It's true.
But the fact that they're able to do that, and it also famously, maybe the other famous besides the budget about this movie, is that it took 2 years for Shane Carruth to edit this thing. This movie spent 2 years in post-production. And a large part, I can only imagine, was straight up editing.
Yeah. I mean, that would make sense. He certainly wasn't spending it color correcting.
So I think that's the question of this movie is, did that come out? Like, did the editing pay off? Is this thing put together in a way that you think works? I think that's the actual question. That's the meat of this movie. That's whether this thing fails or succeeds.
Yeah. No, and I think the question is valid. I think it's a good question. And I think the answer is yes.
All right. Because?
Because it was done well.
I feel like I'm just lightning past whatever you have to say.
No,
here.
No.
Skipping over.
No, you're right. There's so much to this movie, and I don't know. It's
hard to talk about almost, man. Yeah,
it is. It's a difficult movie to talk about because it is. I think the editing is such a strong point, especially when you get to the end of the movie, and you either rewatch it again, which is what I ended up doing, which is why I caught the anti-gravity thing or the thing. Because I watched it multiple times and I went, oh,
is that what you were doing?
Yes.
Like, so you were rewatching it.
Yeah,
today.
I was
all
finishing
right.
It. Yeah. Okay. And that's where I got that. I figured that out this morning when I was like,
okay, that was
through.
Like, man, of all the movies to do a show on immediately after watching this, this is like the worst.
Yeah,
one.
No, not at all.
I needed a night to sleep on this thing.
Yeah. Well, and I watched it on Friday. So.
All right.
But
you just needed a refresher.
Yeah.
A primer, if you will.
That was the
but
best.
Don't.
Oh, I'm so happy you said that. Yeah, the editing is so sharp, and for this movie in particular, like, this is a movie that is going to be of super, super high importance. When you start getting into movies with time travel, and then not only are you talking about the time travel, but you have to kind of show it in a way that makes sense, even though it may not make sense at the time. Like, there is so much that goes into that. And one of the things, one of the breadcrumb pieces that I always really liked, again, there were things that popped up for me on, like, this is my third watch was today, so I've seen it three times in toto, But there are things that popped up that I never noticed before, and I really like that. But one of the breadcrumbs I love is the voiceover, the narrative and the voiceover.
Sure. Is it him? Is it Aaron?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it's since we're gonna spoil this, it's a fun narrative device because now we're thinking out loud. Now we're talking, now we're cooking with gasoline here. We're thinking portals. It's interesting because it's being told to us by future Aaron, relaying the story that he's telling us a story of how he got to where he is, where we find him at the very end of the movie building the time machine in the giant warehouse time machine. He's telling us the story while simultaneously telling it to past Aaron, who is dealing with Abe, who's trying to figure out whether or not everything is right. And then it all comes together on the park bench.
Okay. All right.
My thought here is one of the things that I think I could find interesting about that is, and this is headcanon, of course, but it's an unreliable narrator. This is a totally unreliable narrator situation.
The narrator's almost flavor.
That's the thing. He's not, though, because the narrator's in his ear the whole movie.
Oh, so you think?
That's the thing.
You think the narrator is what's coming through the earpiece?
That's exactly what's coming through the earpiece. And you hear that, and he's telling the story. And that's why at the end of the movie, when you get future Aaron doing the building, the end of the tape is him saying, "You will never hear from me again," because he's never going to go back in time like that again. Well, not like that anyways, but he's never going to hear back, because that Aaron is, I think that Aaron's gone at this point. Like, he doesn't exist.
Okay, so...
So it's an unreliable narrator telling us the story that he's... of how he got to where he was using time travel and what he thinks Abe is doing. That's where I'm sitting now.
No, 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 yeah, I see it. I guess maybe I'm splitting hairs between what an unreliable narrator is, because what you're also seeing is the opposing characters, right? So... The two friends in here, Abe and Aaron, they're friends, but they're different. They're on opposite ends of it. They're not on opposite ends of a spectrum, but
they don't see eye to eye.
They don't, but also Aaron is very much more impulsive than Abe. Abe is very much more analytical, and
you are Abe.
He's more concerned with the time, like not messing things up, you know, like he's basically what happens in the story is that Abe does the thing first and then tells Aaron about it, shows Aaron his double, because, and maybe we should talk about this, how, and this I definitely had to look up.
The time loop worked, because that was very hard for me to get.
Exactly. So how the time travel actually works, and this isn't going to make any sense when I say it out loud, so whatever, anyways. But the original person decides to time travel. So they build... I'm guessing they build the box, or it's already there, whatever.
I feel like you're already going too deep into this.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about. They build the box, and then they set a timer so that when their future self emerges from the time machine, they don't meet, right? So that's it. Original person has not time traveled yet at all. He just builds the box, sets a timer, walks away. In the movie, they go to a hotel room. They remove themselves from the world so as not to affect anything.
Right.
Also, they look up stock prices and stuff so that they can save that for, you know, when they go back. Sets the time. When the time goes ding, the future guy gets out of the box and goes to do his future stuff. The original guy comes back to the box, gets in the box, time travels back, becomes the future guy. And this is the part that kind of messes with me still. Essentially meaning that within that loop, the original guy ceases to exist.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of what tripped me up a little bit. So it becomes this perpetual loop wherein the original guy only exists to time travel and then disappears. What happens in the movie is that they do this a few times make their money. You see them in a huge office building, all this stuff. But then they see, and I guess there's a little bit of the conflict you get to see firsthand, because Aaron kind of wants to use it to go back to this moment when his girlfriend, I think current wife, past girlfriend, was threatened by a guy with a shotgun. And I don't believe anybody dies originally. So that's maybe, I don't get that. Like, yeah, why they wanted to go back if nobody ever got hurt type thing.
It was, okay. So Abraham has to invite Rachel, who is the girl, to the party, but it's not a and it doesn't happen a long time ago. It happens relatively within the, like, they don't go back. They go back a few days.
That's true, because they can only go back effort. They go back in real time, right? So they can only go back as far as the body can withstand, because they'll die of thirst and starvation and all that.
Well,
right?
And I think that part of it is also dependent on how long the machine is on. The machine has to be on X amount of days before they can go back, because if it's only on for 6 hours, they can only travel back in 6 hours in time.
Correct.
But they show later on that there's a backup device that Abe made that's like 3 days old, so he can go further back to stop other things from happening if ever.
Well, to stop, it's called the failsafe box, because if something goes wrong, he hasn't told Aaron about this other box, even though Aaron finds it. He goes back to the failsafe box, goes back to before the first experiment took place, and stops himself from doing it, so that theoretically nothing happens ever.
Right.
Right. That was the failsafe box. Sorry, but I interrupted you saying something.
No, I don't know.
Okay, we're doing better than I thought we would.
That's good.
So essentially, Aaron is the one and maybe this is the point that nobody did get hurt with the shotgun, is that Aaron's still considering going back
to do something
about it, even though nothing happens. Aaron is very much the guy that's like, I want to go back and do this.
Right.
And
okay, hold on.
There's a part in the narration about it, but Abe's like, no, we can't. But then the narrator's like, we had already mentioned it, so it was going to happen type thing, but whatever.
Okay. So this is the fight thing is actually kind of important now that I'm remembering this. So,
well, they haven't had the fight yet, as far as I'm talking, but maybe
I'm talking about the shotgun, the brother, or the boyfriend. So the reason that becomes important is because Abe finds out from friends, not from Aaron, that everybody thinks Aaron is this huge hero. Oh, you didn't hear about this, that somebody came in and your girlfriend.
Oh, you're right.
Rachel,
there is that scene.
Rachel
okay.
is his girlfriend, who didn't tell him that some guy came into the party with a shotgun, because Abe wasn't there at the time. And she was there because Abe said she should meet him there, and he didn't go. So Aaron is the one that stops him. Nobody gets hurt at any point.
Because he, oh man.
And so he then wants to go back to show Abe what happened and how they can affect change and all that stuff. Yeah. So, and then that also brings them head to head where they have the discussion about we should not do this. And that ties back in to the earlier discussion about how he actually wanted to go back in time to punch his boss in the face and then come back, and then so he could tell him
just so he knew what it felt like. Yeah, and then go back. Yeah,
yeah. That was one of the breadcrumbs of them totally doing.
Well, it further illustrates the character conflict there. Yeah. The Aaron is very much the guy that's kind of a wild card, I guess. Maybe they have opposing views on what they should do with the thing. And in fact, the fight I was referring to mistakenly for a second there was when they do have a fight, like they have that disagreement about, it kind of comes to a head where they're driving down the street and they see his father-in-law,
yeah,
except he has a beard where he didn't before that same day. So they're like, oh crap. So they stop and they chase him down and he goes comatose. So they're like, apparently the
implication.
That's the word I was looking for. The implication being that he got a hold of one of the boxes and time traveled without them knowing, and who knows what the heck's going on. So this is when Abe's like, okay, I got to do the failsafe. So he goes to the failsafe box, but Aaron already found out about it because he checked he found there was another room under Abe's name, because he rented it under his name again. Come on, Abe. So go back in time and fix that, dummy. So Abe goes back. They make like he killed himself, but I'm pretty sure he didn't, because don't they both come back later? Like Aaron tries to, like Aaron hides one of himself up in the attic too at some point.
Well, it's, Aaron, okay. Yeah. So that was one of my other favorite breadcrumbs is earlier on in the movie, which again, you find this out and how it kind of all makes sense later on. But earlier on in the movie, they're all sitting at the table with Aaron's wife, and they're sitting in the living room, and Aaron's wife comes in and goes, "Did you call the exterminator?" "No, they're just birds in the attic." And then you find out later on that he had wrapped him up
together
and put him up in the attic, and that's what was making noise. So another fun little breadcrumb that ties things together.
Man, didn't even catch it. Essentially, what happens is that they're put at odds with each other, and while Abe is now trying to go back and stop everything from happening, he's fighting against Aaron, who is also going back. So that's the part on the bench that you're talking about, and they come back to this twice because, and I should mention also, I disagree that the narration's going on in the headset, because there are moments where we hear specifically what's in the headset and it's not the narrator. So I think those exist in two different spaces.
Fair enough.
I can fudge that a little bit. I would love for the narrator to be diegetic in a way that I could say that word again. So it becomes a cat and mouse thing where Abe is trying to not only keep himself from doing the experiment, he's trying to keep Aaron from finding out. But when he goes to get Aaron on the bench that one day, he finds Aaron with the earpiece where he has another past Aaron has already recorded all their conversations so that Aaron can repeat them word for word so that the same thing happens that he wants to happen. But Abe realizes this. So essentially, he, instead of meeting with past Aaron, who he's trying to dissuade from doing anything with the project, he meets up with future Aaron, who already knows what's going on, and then he faints and he's like, shoot, I'm screwed, what do I do? Eventually they find themselves in an airport, and Abe's like, leave, you got it, just get out of here, don't ever come back, this is over, I'm gonna spend the rest of my life trying to keep past Abe from figuring this thing out at all, and you just disappear. So Shane Carruth, that's Aaron, the director, goes off to some
France
part in France, yeah, probably, because next we see him, he's speaking French, or he's telling a bunch of French guys how to build, it seems, a warehouse sized time machine.
Yeah.
And we see Abe in his truck stalking himself at various points, doing whatever he can to make sure the whole thing never happens to begin with. So that's how the movie ends.
Something interesting that I just, maybe this is nothing, maybe I'm just thinking again, this is one of those movies where maybe you're thinking too hard, maybe you're not thinking hard enough, but
a little bit both.
When we get to a point where, and it's like the second time I think that they time travel together, or third, whatever, that Aaron's ear starts bleeding, it becomes a thing.
Yeah,
okay. And then towards the end, when they go, I think it's when they go back for the shotgun thing, Abe's ear is bleeding. And I think that either has something to do with how many times they've gone through and how it's like, how it's affecting them, or it has something to do with their twin, like the other one of them. I'm not sure, but the fact that it didn't happen every single time and it happened really early on to Aaron, who we know now went back a bunch of times to recycle things. Right. And then Abe catches up to him because Abe had started doing it more than him, but then stopped, right, and then was only so I kind of assume that that's part of it, you know?
The way I always understood it, and I did remember this from the first time I saw it. So in fact, I think it was in our discussions with Joe, my discussion with Joe, good old Joe. Shout out to Joe.
Hey, Joe.
But I think it had to do with the fact that they were essentially, I mean, yes, the original ceases to exist, but in a way, they are also copies of a copy of a copy of a copy, right? And they, I guess they don't always go all the way with this stuff, so I don't know if it's a red herring.
I see what you're
saying.
But
there is a bunch of kind of hints of degeneration and stuff like that.
Sure,
there's
the
fungus buildup thing.
And they can't write.
They can't write anymore. Yeah, and they do have a discussion about that. Like, why can't I write? And they're like, I don't know. Like, I can see the words in my head, but I can't make my hand do it. So
that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, back in the day, there was talk that they were copies of copies of copies, and that's kind of what was happening.
No,
they don't really end the movie with that, or that doesn't seem to be, you know, they leave that open-ended, I'll say.
I don't know. I think that's pretty solid. That's pretty good. That does make a whole lot of sense.
The whole movie is pretty solid. The whole movie is pretty good.
It is.
Again, I don't know how they keep me so interested with so little. they just, everything's told indirectly. It's all like, there's almost no statements really, or even like sensible statements. It's all like consequences and questions.
Right.
And somehow still you're like, what is this? What's happening? Trying to put it all together.
Peppered liberally in between technical jargon that sounds legit, because we know some of it is
apparently very legit. Yes. Yeah, according to the director,
and he did discover time travel, which is a whole thing. The fact that this movie was ever
so
released.
I believe him. I liked it better than the first time I saw it that I can barely remember.
Yeah, actually, so. I liked it the first time I saw it. This time I liked it significantly more.
Very cool. And I love movies that you can have conversations like this about them, you know, just about, we spent a lot of that conversation just telling the story or figuring out the story of that movie.
It's fun.
And it was interesting to me.
No, I had fun. I liked it.
Okay.
You know, fun movie for that to double feature? It's a movie we actually already did a show on, but I think it would be a fun double feature would be Brick.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's born of the same period. In fact, I would be surprised if they're more than a year apart.
There's also
2004. Brick was 2005. Yeah. So,
there's like a feeling to it. Like, it's not, and they're both very different movies. And maybe it is just of the era. I don't know. But there's a feeling to the two of them that they partner for me really well in my head.
It's just independent film of that time, man. Like, this stuff doesn't exist anymore, because this was when people were still doing independent films by the seat of their pants, like spending $7,000 for freaking film, right? Brick was I'm almost positive it was done on film. If Brick wasn't done on film, I will give you $7,000.
I can tell you that right around the same time, I guess, probably the biggest indie movie like that that had no budget that gets the guy is Clerks, man.
Is it from? Oh, I feel like that was even earlier.
Probably.
No, that was like 90s, wasn't it? Also, wasn't that video? No, that was film.
That was film. And he spent the majority of his money went to the stock and the soundtrack.
But people don't do that anymore, man. It's so easy and you get so much definition out of digital now. There's just no reason. Like, people say film is dead. Like, this is one of those things. Like, you agree with that or don't. This isn't done anymore. And this has that look. And yeah, it's a good throwback.
When did this come
apparently
out?
2004. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
No,
a year before Brick.
No, okay. Yeah. Freaking Clerks came out in like 96 or 94 or something.
But still, yes, I get what you're saying. There was, in fact, wasn't Clerks like the beginning of an independent film movement in a way? It was one, like, it was a watershed moment in one of those ways that we're talking about that we can look up later and pretend.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it was 1994. And I think the big part of that is that Clerks came right around, it came like right on the heels of Pulp Fiction, and it was when Weinstein, you know, great people, when they were back to this again, they were picking up indie stuff, and that was one of those movies that got picked up by Weinstein,
right.
Whatever, and
nobody knows.
And I think there were a bunch of little films that ended up going that direction where people, you know, and I mean, and Smith is a funny one to me because, you know, it was another stupid small thing. It was like $20,000 or $50,000 maybe, but he maxed out every credit card. He had to borrow money from his family.
Right.
Like he went all out. He was like, I'm going to make this movie, and if it doesn't work, whatever, I'll pay you all back eventually, or I won't.
And it didn't really work. So
no, look at him now. Now he's having heart attacks and doing podcasts and losing weight.
He's actually doing pretty well. I don't mind. I love the niche he's carved out for himself nowadays, actually.
I like Kevin Smith.
For what it's worth.
Kevin Smith is I'm not saying everything he does is perfect. Everything he does, I enjoy.
Neither is he.
Everything, all of his films, I enjoy on some level. They're all fun.
I haven't seen all of them. But also Cop Out was a rough one, regardless.
Okay, yeah, Cop Out was bad. I'll admit that one. But all of his stuff that are his, like, his things, yeah, they're fun.
Gotcha. Hey, this conversation took us to places I never could have imagined. I would still give it and the movie Primer a good 50-1-0 stars, which I guess is still 50 stars. I was going backwards. Ugh, okay. I don't, because time travel.
45 stars.
Okay, thank you. And next week, we're going to do Upstream Color.
That's right.
Come back for it.
50 out of 45. And by next week, we'll have that stupid schedule ready. That'll be available.
I could throw another one on the grill for you if you want. I know I've strangely enough have one, but not two. So if you wanted to fill out the month, I guess I could kind
of. Did I not fill out all of July?
I mean, I don't know.
I know.
Should we look at? That's right. You actually did. Didn't you?
I put crap in there, so it doesn't matter.
I forgot you put crap in there.
Yeah.
Let me look at your crap real quick.
Yeah. Open up the crap basket.
Okay. According to crap here, the 18th could be Danny Boyle's Sunshine.
Oh yeah.
Great little follow up, I guess, to Upstream Color, whatever that's gonna be. I'm sure. And then you had Flash Gordon after that.
What a combo.
Again, maybe we plan these out and we plan them a little more
we'll figure closely, out. Give us the next one, and then you and I we'll have the schedule up next week, and we'll talk about it and figure it out.
Let's go with it. I don't care what you've written it down. What more can I do?
I don't know, you had a movie in mind.
Yeah, but we'll do it in August.
Well, now I want to know what movie it was so we can do it this week.
I thought we could do a ghost story.
Let's do a ghost story.
There's a little movie called A Ghost Story.
Oh, A Ghost Story.
And no, I don't have any reason. Like, there's as much reason to do that as there is to do Sunshine. Although A Ghost Story might fit. I don't know. I think horror. It might fit with Sunshine a little better than Flash Gordon.
I don't know. Is A Ghost Story horror? I don't know anything about it.
It's got Casey Affleck in it, so I think there's like a 50-50 chance that it's called A Ghost Story and does not contain a ghost.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's not, but you know what? Who knows? The beaver didn't have an actual beaver. It had Mel Gibson with his hand in a puppet. What are you going to do?
Is that a real thing?
It is. It was directed by Jodie Foster.
What?
Yeah.
You're just making stuff up.
It is.
I get you made up the calendar and you put the movies down and just dates. I get that. You can't just make up movies. Then it doesn't work. The whole show doesn't work.
Fairly certain that's exactly how everything works.
Okay.
However,
we'll finish this up later.
Yeah. My memory of the movie is foggy at best.
If your memory was like razor sharp about this thing, I'd be more concerned, I guess.
All I can remember is that he's a family man who is not spouting racist stuff for once. Nice for him. And he has like he's super
he doesn't put
introverted.
That in his movies.
And he won't stick up for himself or something. And then he gets a beaver puppet, and the beaver like lets him talk to people and be.
This is ringing a bell.
Yeah.
Nope. Let's still do Sunshine, Flash Gordon, or A Ghost Story. Whatever you choose.
Okay. Well, let's do Sunshine next week, and then we'll do A Ghost Story.
We're doing Upstream Color next week.
Well, okay. Well, after Upstream Color, 2 weeks.
So for the rest of July, you have for the week of the 8th, we're doing Upstream Color. For the week of the 15th, we're doing Sunshine. And for the week of the 22nd, we're doing A Ghost Story.
Sounds
Guess what?
What?
Did you guess it yet?
I didn't.
Guess what?
What?
Now that we're doing the week of, we actually have four more spaces open. Because the week of the 29th is actually August 1st. August 1st on that Thursday.
August Firth?
Yeah, Colin Firth.
There we go.
Of the Colin Firths. So whatever. Calendars, everybody. Those are the next few movies. Watch them, talk about them. Send us comments because we look at them and mention them on the show now. We'll get the hang of this.
We'll get there. I do know that at least one of those movies is streaming. Sunshine, I think, is on HBO.
Oh, that's right.
I don't...
Upstream. Where do we get Upstream? Yeah, might as well mention that.
Upstream Color is going to be streaming on Amazon for $3.99. It's going to be available in those places. It is
yes.
not currently free, but it's around.
Oh.
Check it out.
But probably worth it? Again, I don't know.
Yeah, yet. I don't know. We're going to find out.
Very curious.
I'm looking forward to
but
it.
That's that.
I'm looking forward to it.
No, yes, me very much. Yes, also that. Mm-hmm.
Good. All right.
Until then, I have nothing else. Do you have more movies for the week?
I have a billion movies I can talk about.
Great. Super.
Do you want me to go through my list of... I've got a backlog here.
Really?
Yeah, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 movies.
Good gosh. It's up to you. You've fulfilled your hour with me that I require of you on a weekly basis.
Good.
You may now do whatever you wish.
All right. Did I talk to you at all about Always Be My Maybe?
No. Did you watch that?
I did. It's wonderful.
It's
a true delightfully. It's a delightful little romp. I'm not gonna lie about it. It seems really dumb. Maybe it's because it's humor from like cultural humor that I have not gotten to see a lot of. It's not that. I don't know, man. It's just very funny.
Ali Wong's funny.
Ali Wong is super funny. Randall Park is freaking
also very funny.
Hysterical. Yeah. Keanu Reeves.
I did watch the Keanu Reeves part. Like the whole taken.
He is in the movie quite a bit. He is in the movie.
The one where he enters his introduction. I watched.
Yes, it's just terrific. No, that movie is seriously. It is a delightful, cute little movie. It doesn't do anything new or fantastic, but it does.
I just haven't.
Everything it does well, and it's super cute. I think they're really fun.
I haven't laughed at any of the previews. Like, it's more of a. I guess they made me smile a little bit. Like, it made me curious about sure, but I just got the feeling if it was like. If that's the caliber of jokes throughout the whole movie, the movie would then itself have to be stronger than it is funny, and I wasn't sure I was. Believe in that.
Yeah, you know, I think that there were definitely some laugh out louds for me. Some LOLs, as kids call it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, what?
Yeah, no, I can't. Sorry, I'm not speaking in leet. But I had not seen the preview for it. I came downstairs and Beth had turned it on. And I was like, all right, let's watch it.
Oh, funny.
Really funny movie, man. Super cute. I liked it a lot. Mm. I did.
Okay, whatever. It's free.
Yeah.
I'll put it on while I eat fish or something.
Only other thing I want to mention, and there's just not a lot I'll talk about with this anyways, but Beth and I watched The Favorite with Olivia Williams and Emma Stone. And
so you won't talk about the movie that you wouldn't stop talking about when you watched it?
Well, I just don't have a ton to say other than what I'll regurgitate here to you that I've already said.
Okay.
Rachel Weisz, fantastic. Emma Stone's fantastic. Olivia Williams, there's totally a reason why she won the Oscar. That movie is utterly gorgeous. Fantastic. Fantastic costuming. The cinematography, I do not remember a movie that not only effectively used fisheye, but used it multiple times without it having to be like a chase sequence or a bank robbery type thing. This is a fisheye being placed in a giant ornate like castle where a queen is, and it's being used instead of following a chase. It's being used to follow a single person as she walks around like the banisters but it's beautiful. It's so well done.
Huh.
And the direction for the movie, fantastic, man. That is, I am so surprised to say I cannot kind of praise that movie enough. That movie was so much better, so different than I thought it was going to be.
Hmm.
And
did you say this was another one that Beth had started watching when you came down, or did you?
No, we chose to watch it together. Okay. Yeah. And I got to say there is kind of a, the turn and back and forth between, Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. Man, those two play catty and conniving and snotty to each other like so perfectly. You know, it's this kind of wonderful British like sharp-tongued devious stuff that you see in like in Downton Abbey.
Oh.
It's kind of like that, but
little taste of Downton, huh?
Taste of Downey. it's a cool flick. It's beautiful. It's well made, and I recommend it to anybody who likes Emma Stone or other people. Also, I want a shout out to Beast, X-Men First Class, Nicholas Holt.
Oh, he's in it too.
He's in it too, and he plays one of the like the foppish. He holds sway when they start talking about the wars, like, and I don't remember what his position is. Like, I don't remember if he's a land baron or something, but he holds a whole lot of sway in how people.
He's a war boy. What are you talking about?
That's right. Yeah, and he comes running up to her like she's wearing, you know, this beautiful gown, and they're sitting in this like parliamentary thing, and he just jumps up on the desk and sprays his teeth silver.
Witness me, Yolara, your majesty.
Witness me, your majesty.
Great.
And then he falls over.
Rachel Weisz, did I ever mention page 8?
Mm.
I don't remember. You shouldn't either.
I don't remember.
Okay. It was the last thing I saw Rachel Weisz in.
Oh, I like Rachel Weisz.
She was fan. She's very amazing.
She is.
Bill Nighy.
Good.
I swear I talked about this. I must have.
Sounds familiar now.
Page 8.
I'll check it.
There you go.
I'll reread it.
Okay.
Page 7 made sense. Page 8, totally lost.
Primer.
Primer by Prima Games.
No, that's just the script for Primer. Describes it to a T. Anything else? You can keep going. Like I said, I'm not going to stop you.
No, I'm good.
Well, that's a fair amount then.
Yeah, let's come back next week. Let's talk about Upstream Color and probably have another very confusing discussion about things that we don't understand. That
yeah, is there time stuff to it? Is there...
I think there is,
relationship stuff to it?
I think there might be.
There's people hugging on the poster.
I don't think that's going to be the end result. I just feel like that poster is telling me, come in, feel happy, know you're going to die.
And that's next week on Book Club for Movies. Podcast at bookclubformovies.com if you want to talk to us. Also, we have Twitter and Facebook. We'll respond to it all. We're very respondy.
We have never taken more than a few milliseconds to get back to anybody. Oh man, you know what I'm gonna watch next week, by the way? I won't talk about it a bunch, but that Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon.
I got that queued up.
Yeah, I'm queued up watching it. All right, bye.